So, before I get into this episode, I think we should just write off this episode, to be honest, man. Maybe just call it a day. Just... Because, you know, it's... They said... I think we should just write off.
I actually do really like that. Sebastian was like, is it okay if I did the open this week? And I was like, absolutely go for it. I have a great idea for the opening. That's all it was. I like it. I will give you that.
Thank you. And if you don't know what I was referencing, then, you know, you should check the episode you're watching.
If you don't know what he was referencing, you didn't even bother to look at the title before you clicked on.
Oh, yeah, true.
I always feel like when we were listening to a podcast, I had, like, celebrity guests, and they, like, really tease the guest as if you don't know who it is. It's like, I clicked onto this because of who the guest is. Yeah. You know what I mean? You listen to, like, well, it wouldn't be Joe Rogan, because they're always on straight away. But, like, Marc Maron, for example, he always does, like a five-minute intro on his own, like, guys, you will not believe we managed to get onto the show today. I'm like, yeah, I know you got Eddie Murphy. That's why I clicked onto this podcast. Always find that strange. But yeah, today, welcome to Lynn Sebastian Ever Simpsons podcast. The podcast myself and Sebastian here due to dodge our taxes.
Tax avoidance. Yeah.
You said it in a very, like, Ricky Gervais way. Like you're about to do, like, one of those interviews in The Office. Like, tax avoidance. Don't agree with it. It's important.
But, you know, Brent,
if you can, like, skim a few dimes here and there, why wouldn't you? joking, of course. Anyway, today we are reviewing, right off this episode, exactly, the 19th episode. Really there. 19th episode of the 34th season. And guys, let's just jump in.
Let's fucking do it, man.
Let's fucking go, like. Let's just go. So we open up and... Homer is watching a football game. The two episodes in a row now actually have begun with like a sports related thing. Yeah. I'm just realizing. Yeah, he's watching an ad for gambling. The NFL coach Jim Jimerson was talking about how gambling is now legal in every state except the lame ones. But in the world of sports betting, you better sport bet responsibly and list out all the rules and all. I had to pause because it just all came up on the screen really quickly, and like Harry Shearer always being great as like the radio announcer type voice, just skimming through them so quickly. But I had to pause to take them all in. They were so good. You probably related them because you do a bit of sports betting. The rule number one was only talk about wins, not losses. Number two, stay under your limit unless you're feeling it. Number three, Met, Jets, Nets equals debts. And then he goes, if you suffer from gambling addiction, call 1-800-LOSS-AGAIN. 1-800 can't win if you don't play. 1-800 still safer than crypto. 1-800 college is overrated. 1-800 when you think about it, all of life is a gamble. 1-800 Vegas is for families now. 1-800 she done left. So good.
And it's true because like these bet ads always try and seem innocent. And it's like my favorite one is the Bet365 one. You've probably seen it. Bet365. Yeah. And please gamble responsibly at the end. And it's like, well, I've seen all that now and I want to put my money on.
I know, it's crazy.
Can't tell me to be responsible.
I was just saying there actually, you just made me realize something. I was just about to say, I'm seeing so many gambling ads recently and I'm like, why is that popping up? Because that's not in my algorithm. Like, I don't watch sports, I don't do anything related to gambling. I've just realized now why. They just have enough money to give so many people, so many YouTube channels and, you know, networks and stuff ad time. And that's all money they made off screwing people over.
I know.
It's fucked when you think
it's
about
crazy.
It.
It's crazy.
I mean, how many fucking times have you seen that Petty Power ad?
It's a circle.
Yeah, exactly. How many times have you seen that fucking Petty Power ad? Do you think I'll be as good looking as my mom when I'm older? I hope so.
Oh, yeah.
Or the one where it's like, what's your name? Oh, I already have a girlfriend. No, I meant for the coffee.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen those two fucking Paddy Power ads so many times. For the American listeners, you probably have no clue what we're talking about. Paddy Power is an Irish and English gambling website. And they have these ads that aren't even to do with gambling. It's really strange.
Yeah, and Paddy Power was my go-to. I mean, it's weird because...
Paddy Power.
I think it's a sign of when you're getting older, but all my friends gamble.
Really?
Like, all my friends that like sports...
Isn't that your friend?
...gamble. I rarely do. I used to a fair bit.
Well, you do like low stakes sometimes, don't you?
I have done. Yeah. I haven't. I think I've touched it in half a year. But
oh, okay. I remember when we first started working together, you were very
into it.
Yeah.
Low
stakes, obviously. You're never risking crazy money.
It's always
but...
a fiver or something.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's like, yeah, all my friends are really into it. And sometimes, I mean, it's a bit annoying because like, these are like my back home friend is like, I go out with them and like all they're talking about is like a bet they've got on the football. Really? It's like, just can we watch the football or just chat?
Yeah,
it's
I hear you. I do understand though. It's almost like a drug. It's almost like a drug because
it makes a game you're watching instantly more entertaining.
Yeah, because the stakes are bigger for you. Like the team you're rooting for, it's a bigger deal.
Like you could not support either team. But now you've got odds in favor of this team, so you're supporting the team.
Yeah. You have all these alternatives you can do, which comes up right now, actually. Yeah. Right after the ad, Homer goes, "Thank you, football. I always forgot to bet on the game." And the commentator is saying that they're at an all-time low on their ratings, and only people watching are gamblers making gimmick bets. And Homer's like, "You gotta lose money to make money." And we see all the bets that Homer's made, and again, I have to pause it, and they're also hilarious. What a testament to how clever the writers are here. I think I've touched on the first 2 minutes of the episode so far. They just fit as many gags as they possibly can wherever they see an opportunity. So I had to pause this again. The gimmick bets that Homer made was referee kisses quarterback, 80-year-old streaker, Thanos appears, no concussions. The most ridiculous bet that no one would get a concussion. It says if any team scores even points, they'll be eating name brand ramen tonight. Oh, yeah, so then he wishes on his wedding ring that tricked marriage into marrying him that the Atoms will win, and they end up winning. So he jumps and he throws the ring outside by accident. He checks under the house and he sees it's in an absolute state. He says that he needs to call his great handyman that he hasn't seen in ages. What was his name again? Dave? Daryl? Best people used to be a dead fucking guy in handyman gear that just says Doug. Great little detail that's just a dead handyman underneath the house. Yeah, so good. He hears a noise and he's like, "Is that a ghost? If so, my fear the afterlife isn't real, but please be a ghost." And we see there's multiple skunks, and Homer starts recording himself like,
"March, kids, remember me how I used to smell. That is the horrible stench I'm about to become. I love you all, to varying degrees."
We then cut to Marge hosing him down in the backyard, and one of my favorite jokes is when he was so stupid, just back going, "Ew, caramba."
Yeah. Caramba.
That's one of those jokes that you know somebody had to fight for it. Mm-hmm. It's so dumb. But that's what makes it hilarious. It's so stupid. I loved it. So the Marge puts Homer's clothes into a pillowcase with material and clean them in seconds. And it smells great. And Marge's like, "Wow, that took out the skunk smell and the Homer smell." And she says she learned this method after years of practice, as Homer has brought home so many smells. I mean, a montage of him just coming home in different t-shirts, like, you know, showcases the type of smells he's came home with. One was the garlic knot-a-thon, the dumpster demolition derby, the sardine eating champion, and him just coming out of a hippie van driven by Otto, of course. And Lisa says it could be really beneficial. Ooh. Yeah, woo, Otto, dude. Actually, I saw a great video I'd highly recommend. Not a recommendation of the week, but I recommend it. Lady I love, great Simpsons YouTuber. Oh. Yeah, love is a... I don't even know what she looks like. She only shows like her Simpsons counterpart. A lady named Simpsons Theory. A British lady, actually. Brought a video about Otto and kind of talks about how the show screwed him over. And as much as I love the Simpsons, I do agree with her points in the video. They introduce Otto and he's like clearly a younger adult than the mostly the adults are. And so he's kind of seen as like someone that the kids look up to because he's cool and he's hip. Yeah. And you just have the whole dynamic with, like, Bart and him. The Bart kind of saw him as a father figure in different ways to Homer. And then as the show went on, he just became more and more just like he's a stoner and that's it. That's a whole gag, you know?
Yeah.
It was a very good video, as I have to say. A really good dissection of, like, how they, like, devolved the character.
I do wish more came from him.
Yeah, 100%. He's a great character with so much potential.
Face the facts, which is probably they just couldn't do the voice acting.
Well, that is like realistically probably what the biggest
fair
reason.
Enough.
Yeah, realistically probably the biggest reason why we don't see much of him, as Harry Shearer has said, he's fine to do like a one-liner gag as Otto, but like to do an episode where he's a main character is like a huge strain on his throat, which, you know, is understandable, but I'm hoping that maybe someday we could get something more from Otto.
And you'd know all about strains on your throat.
Yeah, man. Because
you had
doing podcasts. And having COVID, yeah.
Not from anything else.
No. See, that for after the podcast. But, Lee says it could be really beneficial for people who don't have access to washing machines, like Marge's cleaning method. And Marge goes, "Oh, like homeless people. Oh, no, you mean the unhoused." "I do?" We got to them doing this business in like a very like run down Paris Springfield, and they have like the the material, like a bag, like a yellow bag of pillowcases, or sorry, a blue bag of pillowcases. Lisa asks why all their old pillowcases are blue, and Mary says it's because of her hair, and not that she dyes it. It's just such a vibrant, natural blue. Love that detail. It's not something you ever even think about, but like, obviously, because the cartoon was like, no one has blue hair.
No.
Like, obviously, she dyes it. There's not anything that would cross your mind.
The only people that have blue hair is all these SJWs.
Yeah, all these millennials.
Yeah, all these pronoun users.
Yeah, I guess marriage is a millennial. And then Gil does their cleaning method on his suit and immediately feels more confident and goes to get his job back as a stock image model for a man in suit. He's got a piece of plastic over his face that just says Getty Images. Yeah, really, really great gag. So good. My buddy Ollie Miller has a great joke about that, actually.
I wonder how much they get paid just to be in one of them.
I remember a buddy of mine back in Cork was doing some stock image work for a while and, like, really well. Really, really good money, yeah.
I mean, I wonder how much that guy who checks out that girl from behind.
Oh, yeah, it's fucking everywhere, yeah. I wonder, like, is it a one-off payment or do they get some sort of, like, continuous residual commission for every time it's being reused? I really have no idea. You would like to hope they get residuals, but we know about all these companies screwing people over all the time.
I wonder how much money, like, that guy's owed a lot of money. His face is everywhere.
Yeah, oh, Jesus Christ, yeah, I've seen that picture so many times. Then the rich Texan comes in and cleans his hat, and it becomes black. Like, oh, my hat's finally black again. It was, like, always white. He offers to donate $100 and asks for the name of their charity, but Mary says they don't have a charity, but he wants to donate while not having to provide any taxes. So he puts them in touch with his accountant, and the accountant immediately grants them rights to be a legitimate charity, and they call it the Lisa M. Simpson Foundation. And then the rest section fills out his donation. He goes,
I love anything that gets me out of taxes.
Taxes?
No, taxes. I hate taxes, but I love taxes, because folks in taxes love taxes and hate taxes. No taxons, what taxons stand for.
And obviously a bit of time has passed between the charity.
Did you ever watch Fairly Odd Parents?
Oh yeah, I love Fairly Odd Parents.
That guy reminded me of the Dimmesdale Dimmadome guy.
How did I make the... They're the exact same character. How did I make the connection? I don't even know who came first. I would say The Simpsons came... the Simpsons obviously came first. I would say The Rest Texan came first as well.
Okay.
But the Demolition Derby guy is... Or Doug Dimmadome.
Yes,
Doug Dimmadome?
I think...
He's definitely in the show a lot more than The Rest Texan is.
Yeah.
That's so... that is the exact same character. The same joke and everything. Yeah.
Big hat.
Doug Dimmadome. Yeah, that's insane. Yeah, I used to love Fairly Odd Parents. And Danny Phantom, both created by the same guy. Yeah. Bruce Hartman. Yeah. Danny Phantom was one of those great shows. Even though it frustrated me as a kid because... Obviously, we didn't have streaming services, so...
It was rarely on, wasn't it?
Well, it was more so... Well, I had Nickelodeon and stuff, so I could watch it pretty regularly. It was more so that every episode was, like, to be continued. You had, like, to follow a storyline.
Yeah.
But it would air out of order, so I'm like... You know, it'd be, like, part one of an episode. I'm like, okay, surely part two is next, and it'll just be part one of another episode. I'm like, oh, my God!
At least now you have the option.
Of course, yeah, streaming for days. That event would be a great show to update for a modern audience, actually. I'd say being, like... You know, like sci-fi and supernatural stuff is so popular now. I think that would do really well.
My favorite is just all the old Cartoon Network shows because they're so strange.
Mm. Oh, fantastic! Yeah, Courage the Cowardly Dog, Cow and Chicken. You can see they let the animators and the creators do exactly what they want to do in those shows. The animation is just wild. Like, yeah, I love them. Yeah, we see that the charity is doing well, and one man is even handing his bindle for a briefcase. And the crazy cat lady is now doing sightseeing tours around Springfield. And she's, like, pointing things out to people, but still speaking utter nonsense and throwing cats while she's pointing things out. Marion asks Lisa to get more baking soda, but Lisa is outraged to say they're using Hand and Armor baking soda, which promotes child labor, and even some of their top executives are children. Marion's like, but the smiley hand in the box is so cute. But Lisa says they need to make sure that everything they use is ethically sourced, and says she'll look for ingredients while Marge is searching for funding. And she makes Homer take her, and we cut to them on a mountain. Homer's absolutely exhausted, and Lisa's like, I'm feeling great things about the baking soda company at the very top of this mountain. And Homer's like, why can anything good ever be at the bottom of a mountain? They get to the top and they see that it's a monastery / baking soda company. Ridiculous. And they make baking soda as part of a meditation method. For every 10 boxes we make, a monk reaches enlightenment. And Wong just like makes 10 bucks and he goes, oh my god, I finally understand the plot of Inception. Now to ponder Tenet. To which I would say, don't bother. Have you seen Tenet?
Yeah, and I didn't like him.
No, we're not a fan. My whole opinion about Tenet was, I was very down for the whole, and look, I like Mr. Nolan. I was, in a recent podcast, I was very praising of Oppenheimer. I genuinely thought it was a fantastic film. But my opinion of, like, when I saw Inception, I was like very down for the whole, you have to watch it a few times to understand it. I was very intrigued by that. By the time I got to Tenet, I was like, I don't even think you tried to make this plot make sense. You just went out of your way to confuse Tenet, people.
Yeah, it's definitely his weakest, probably his weakest film.
Oh, for me, 100%. Yeah, definitely. Now, I haven't seen all of his films, but I would imagine so. Yeah, no, really, really. I was just not up for the whole watch it a few times again. I was like, I didn't enjoy it the first time, so I'm not going to watch it again. Mm. You know what I mean? Yeah. He then shows them the baking soda. It's called I Can't Believe It's Not Buddha. It's in like a really clean fridge with nothing but the baking soda. And Homer's like, this is the first empty fridge I've ever liked. And Lisa's like, how much? She's like, oh, we don't believe in worldly possessions. So you won't have any after you buy it. And she misses Mars. It's expensive. And Marge's like, okay, I'm on it. And the Salvation Army comes up to her and threatens Marge to leave unless she wants to donate blood. When she leaves, she runs into Linda Hibbert, the most we've ever gotten of Linda Hibbert, of Dr. Hibbert's wife. Never been any details about her whatsoever. So he went from that to a pretty substantial part in this episode. She tells her that as a pillar to the community, a doctor's wife, she knows a thing or two about running a charity. It was such a strange thing to me. We'd never seen much from her before, and the first major thing she'd ever did was sing a song. It was a weird way to introduce the character, yeah. Very strange.
I didn't like the song that much.
No, I thought it was pretty cringe, yeah. It kind of a catchy beat to it, but it didn't feel necessary, it didn't serve much of a purpose. I mean, even just talking about the great songs that were in Family Feud last week.
The problem is, like, when they do songs for the sake of doing a song, it's just, like,
really... Yeah, weird. Yeah, exactly. It definitely felt like that here. Just, it was unnecessary. It didn't need to be there. But yeah, she's basically... singing about how charities are a good way to look fancy and stand out. And
it's time to stop thinking small. You gotta dress up like an heiress. What's the point of this fancy ball? Why, dear, to raise awareness. Your charity has to stand out from all the other ones with their hands out.
Sadly, I'm a little squarish.
Honey, you need to get more garish. There's no better way to show compassion than trotting out a few Kardashians. Don't mean to sound like I'm giving orders, but destroy those doctors without borders. And to really get your donors given, your charity needs a ribbon.
Give me something blue.
This one here will do. Get the ribbons everywhere so there's not a patch of vanish. Once everyone is sick of it, we've reached peak awareness.
Big montage as the song is happening. The company has now became super successful. We did have a new office, which used to be a workspace for WeWork and then for the WeWork TV show. And Marge is like, it must have been such a successful business to have a TV show made about it. And she sees her office, but finds it very strange that people will have to go through her office to get to the bathroom. And Marge's like, or Linda's like, that's your own personal bathroom. She's like, oh, my own private bathroom? I have a husbandless bathroom. I won't need a candle. We see that they now have their own blue brand that sells everything from shampoo and conditioner. And the moment she said that, I was like triggered. How many years I use shampoo and conditioner? As in, like, the combined one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's so bullshit.
Terrible. It's bullshit. But it's like, I've always compared shampoo, conditioner, and sporks as being two similar things in that they're trying to do two things at once, so obviously they're not going to be able to do either very well.
Oh, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the point, realistically, we shouldn't even need to use any of them.
No.
We do anyway, but shampoo... You're stripping your hair of all the natural moisture and grease.
Yeah,
and
oils.
And in the conditioner, you're putting natural grease and moisture back into it.
Yeah.
Unnatural grease.
Unnatural grease and moisture, sure, so, yeah. Yeah, but so then what would a combination of that be doing?
Yeah.
But we're
stuck in the loop now. We have to do it.
Yeah, but the one that's literally shampoo and conditioner... They should just are battling each other then because they're both doing the opposite thing. So how can that even work?
And yeah. Conditioner, really, you're meant to leave it in your hair
pointless.
For a little bit.
So, are you really?
Yeah, you're meant
maybe
to.
I'll try
you
that.
You need to rub it in and then leave it in for like 5 minutes.
Maybe I'll try that. Okay, interesting. Then Lisa comes back. I found this very confusing. It was like the company like getting gigantic seemed to have happened the entire time Lisa was in the monastery with Homer. It was very strange. Like, it's like she didn't realize how big it got until she came into this office.
Right.
You know, I don't know. It seems like a strange detail. Maybe I'm reading into it too much. She tells Lisa the blue ribbons became so popular that they ran out of ribbons. And Lisa's like, what do you do to tie the bags? Like, oh, we're a bit behind there on our bag making. We're more focused on something more important, raising awareness of our bag making. And she shows her a blueprint that they have their new headquarters. And Lisa's like, how are we paying for that? And Marius goes, with a generous donation from our top patron, Mr. Burns. And she says, Lisa's like, he's the biggest polluter in town. We cut to Lenny and Carol with leaf blowers blowing a bunch of three-eyed fishes into a pile and lighting them on fire. And then Mr. Burns is going, excellent. Were you a little bit underwhelmed by that? When she said that Mr. Burns was the top patron? I thought he was going to end up being a really important part of the episode. And we see him again at the end, but I thought he was going to become a main part.
I know what you mean, but also I wasn't expecting it.
Okay, sure, I hear you. When I first saw it, when she said that, I was like, oh, great. And he didn't end up being a huge part of the episode, unfortunately. He does have a great bit at the end, though, that we'll get to. I know, I thought it could have like helped, like, show what a bad charity it became if like we saw Mr. Burns
running it.
Makes
running so much sense, but maybe they thought that's too predictable.
Maybe so. But I mean, I would have been down for it. Marge says that while Lisa and Homer were strolling through the mountains enjoying their lives, she was making real change happen. And Lisa's like, with this? She does have a blue crusty fried chicken with Krusty's face on it. It just says, hey, forget all the other stuff I did. She says that the company is trying to appear ethical by putting the Lisa M. Simpson name brand on it. She says it's blue washing and it doesn't help the homeless. And Marge is like, we call them the unhoused. Lisa, it's her name on the wall and she is totally against this. And Marge is like, it's my hair color. Lisa goes, it's Claire All's hair color. And decided to take a little breather from each other. We then cut to the ice cream parlor the next day. You see they're both still very mad at each other. And Lisa says she hasn't calmed down. She doesn't need to. And Mary says she thinks she knows her better than she knows herself because she's her mother. Lisa's like, oh, you're making my future therapist so rich right now. Then take another break. We cut back to the ice cream parlor again. And Lisa's like, are you better? And Mary just goes, great voice acting from Julie Carpenter. Hear the rage in her so well. They take another break, cut back to the ice cream parlor again. They're like, okay, I think that one was the clincher. Mary says they promoted Lisa to emeritus, and Lisa knows that means she's been fired. And Mary's like, no, we're just de-responsibilitizing you. Congratulations. Lisa then storms off, and Skinner and Agnes come in.
It's my favorite student, Lisa M. Simpson.
There, now you got ice cream. Let's go.
Firstly, her just being an awful mother, but also Skinner being a 6-year-old man who has to get his mother to get him ice cream. It's just so pathetic.
Yeah.
Great little bit. We can go back to the house. Lisa asks Homer what she should do. Great little way to bring Homer into the episode here. He's like, finally I can pass on my vast knowledge of what I'm truly good at, being canned. He says that being fired is part of his job. The last day he got fired for how long he was gone getting ingredients with Lisa. I guess that bit kind of fixed the detail because it let you know that they were gone for quite a while trying to find his baking soda.
Yeah.
So much so that he had to get fired. He says that the first stage of getting fired is anger. The next stage is pretending that you still have a job. And Mark just goes, Homer, can you take out the garbage? Like, sorry, honey, I'm late for work. Cut to Lisa and Homer in a cafe together. Lisa asks how long they have to stay in the cafe. He's like, until my boss realized that he made a mistake firing me and gives me my job back. And he starts like kicking the table, and Lisa's like, I thought anger was stage one, but that was righteous anger. This is misdirected. And we cut over to Kirk, and he's just like, stage three. Like, he's well aware of it. We didn't cut to Lisa watching TV. Marge comes over and is like, how are you doing? He's like, I'd be doing a lot better if you moved that body I ruined in childbirth. Marge just passes through like, I ruined it first. And Homer says she's in stage four, glowering without showering.
Which actually is a horrible thing to say to your mum.
Of course, yeah, awful,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, actually really horrible.
Yeah, well, that's because, like, that's just how pissed off she is with marriage right now. Yeah, it definitely wasn't, like, thrown in as like a passing comment. Yeah. Her intentions were to piss her off. And marriage is a good body.
Yeah.
Especially if she had three kids. She looks great. Mm. Fucking hell. But Homer says that she's in stage four, glowering without showering. But they're always at stage five, reluctant acceptance. And it's like, soon you'll have your daughter back and I won't have to keep making up stages. Lisa apologizes to Marge, and Marge invites her to the new headquarters grand opening. And Homer just goes, congratulations, honey, you're now at stage six. Buy a podcasting equipment, but never unbox it. Absolutely triggering. Obviously, I did buy. I did end up actually unboxing and using it, but I did actually buy it while I was out of a job, so I guess it's kind of true. It wasn't lockdown, I wasn't fired, just to clarify.
Yeah.
But that is my first point.
Prime time, yeah.
I mean, that was when, I would say probably at least 55% of the podcasts I listen to now were podcasts that started in lockdown. There were so many that just thrived in the lockdown and perspired afterwards. Like, yeah. I guess it really was a time of, like, people finding out things that they wanted to do and sticking to it. And I think a podcast ended up being that for a lot of people. So, yeah, it's super cool. We then cut to there being a big meeting at the Lisa and Simpson Foundation. Linda says that their awareness is at an all-time high. She's on a scale. We see that global warming is at the bottom, followed by refugees at the very top, the Lisa and Simpson Foundation. They said Mary says they can finally focus on helping the homeless. One of the women just goes, as wife of a surgeon, I love helping people, but we're a mega successful non-profit, not some charity. Somebody else goes, as a wife of a radiologist, I agree. And Mary's like, but what about all the big donations? I mean, deductions that we got from all these companies. Linda's like, the companies paid us in awareness. And Marge is like, but when do we start helping people? It's like, my wife's a dermatologist. We got there seeing all these signs of all these companies that clearly have used the company to make them look good.
Mm.
One is called Blue Cash and Checking. Another Laramie cigarettes, but the cigarettes are now blue. It's Light Up the Blues. Another is a huge blimp, a blue blimp that says support the unhoused. And Marge realizes they really have been blue washing. And then Lisa says that the grand opening is starting to make her a little bit queasy. Homer goes, queasiness is just hunger in disguise. Like how a hangover means you should just keep drinking. He asks Bart, they're at the grand opening of the headquarters now. He asks Bart for the rundown. Bart goes, there's mini quiche at 6. There is tuna cans at 10 and 2. And Homer's like, move out and don't fall for the bruschetta. It's a trap to fill you up. And Bart's like, it's an honor to be your chicken wingman. Just cry a little bit, and they move down and start devouring the buffet. Marge sees that there's homeless people in tents across the way from the new headquarters, and goes up to Gil and asks him what happens. He tells her that they demolished his low-income house and that he was in to build the new headquarters. He's just like, I'm homeless. Marge's like, oh, you mean the unhoused? He's like, I live in a tent on a sidewalk and people yell at me for it every day. I can call it whatever I want. Very, very true. The Marge goes in and starts, does like a big speech addressing them all and shaming them and saying that they made the situation much worse. And Linda cuts in being like, well, creating more homeless people will raise awareness. And Marge decides to hand the rights back to Lisa. Crusty just goes, Lisa Simpson is a real person? And Lisa announces that she'll turn the building into a shelter for the unhoused, and all the homeless people start storming in. And all the wealthy people are like shouting at them, being like, they're using the wrong forks, she's wearing the dress I gave away. And one of them goes, that's the man I use as a windshield for a night. Great detail. And then Mr. Burns takes over, being like, I have had enough. Great, one of the highlights of the episode for sure. Great speech.
Enough of this do-goodery. Open your eyes, rich people. We're not here to help the less fortunate. We're here to bask in our fortunateness. If we really wanted to make a difference, we'd do the one thing we've spent our lives avoiding, paying our taxes. Then one organization, the government, could tackle all of society's ills instead of leaving it to 1.5 million separate ego-driven micro-bureaucracies called charities. Including, get a load of this scam, religions. But no one here wants the rational way. We all want the United Way. Because that's the American way. Now, I paid $10,000 for this table. I'm taking it with me.
great little speech from Mr. Burns there.
Yeah.
But now that I'm saying it out loud, I realize he actually does make some clever points within the comedy too.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, I mean, Charlie does totally flow. Like, I remember, I haven't gotten as much here. I've just gotten better at dodging those charity people that stop you. You know, being like, hey man, how you doing? Can I tell you a joke? They try to like reel you in by being really kind.
I had the weirdest one the other day.
Oh really?
Outside Tesco,
mm-hmm.
which is just really weird because I live in like a bit of an area where it's just where people live.
Yeah, it's not like a city. Tesco, yeah, I'm surprised to hear it. Yeah.
And there was just this random lady outside Tesco. It was something for refugees. And like,
yeah,
she stopped me and was like, how are we doing today, darling? And I was like, yeah, I'm all right. How are you? Like, she was like, yeah, it's something about the weather.
Yeah.
Something else. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of just taking a toll randomly, you know. Stupid conversation.
I hate it. Yeah. I feel it already.
And she's like, yeah, okay. Enjoy your shop, darling. And then that's it. She didn't even like.
Oh, really?
Oh, maybe it was like a tactic where it was like.
Maybe she wanted to do it as you came out.
Maybe I'll then be like, what's this about anyway? You know,
that's a new tactic. I haven't heard of that one. They try to get you straight away. The worst one I ever had, and which is why I try to ignore them now, no matter how kind they seem, I will give them absolutely nothing, is I remember running into one in Cork that was, you know, doing some charity for helping out African children, and, you know, really, really sweet. Started talking to her for a while, and she's like, listen, obviously, I'm chatting you for another reason. I'm like, yeah, I get it. And, you know, it starts like guilt tripping me a little bit, being like, you know, they really need your help. I'm like, I'm sure you don't need all the money you have. It's only €20 a month. And I'm like, I was in college at the moment. I was not making a lot of money. I was like, look, I want a grant. I work at the weekends, and that money is literally just enough just to keep me going with groceries and stuff. Like, I couldn't pay €20 a month. And she started saying shit like, this is really bad, you think about it. Like, she literally, I was like 18, 19, 20 at the very oldest. Yeah. And she was literally saying, like, but couldn't your parents help you out?
Oh, my
like,
God.
And I was like, I guess they could, but, like, I don't think they'd be happy with me, like,
hey, can you just give me £20 a month for this charity? Like,
yeah, yeah. Like, I don't think they'd be happy with me, like, signing up for a charity without telling them.
Why don't I phone them and you can talk to them?
Yeah, yeah. But then she was being like, I'm sure your parents would be really proud to know that, like, you're someone who cares about helping these people
see,
out.
This is when it's just too far.
Oh, way too far,
you're
yeah.
just guilt-tripping.
Yeah, it's like, you work for this company that apparently has all these great morals, but your morals of trying to get money out of someone who's made it very clear to you they don't really have that money to give away, it's horrible,
that's
yeah.
That's the thing, and it's annoying that the general public have to take the blame for not giving enough.
100%, like, yeah.
There's people that, yeah, it's...
It's messed up.
But we're the ones that fight each other and have to, like, beg each other for money. You know?
Exactly. And the craziest thing that these charities don't do, and it's because they run through a system where, you know, people who work there who aren't part of the charity are financially benefiting and stuff like that. All these sneaky things that we don't know about, but... It's so annoying that they don't do like smaller systems like £1 a month. In the long term, you probably make more money. It's always like £20 a month. Like, I would have £1 a month to give away. That's easy. I'm not going to give away £20 a month.
A really good way to avoid it, I found, is if they really, really rope you into it.
Yeah.
Just say, I'm in a rush, but you have a website, right? So I'll check it out through the website. Just to be sure. And then they're like, okay. Like, you say you're giving them
something, but you see, the reason why, and I know it's because I know someone who used to work for them, the reason why they try to get you there and then is that person gets a commission directly.
I'm glad I didn't do them. I remember I applied for Greenpeace back in the day,
right?
And that's the same sort of thing. You get commission based on
them. Exactly, yeah. So if you do through a website, they get no commission.
Yeah.
But yeah, look, obviously, I'm not talking about, there's obviously some amazing charities out there, but there's also some that are sneaky, so it's just good to be aware, you know, of do your research before supporting any charity, I would say.
Yeah,
absolutely. But yes, the episode concludes, they let all of the all the homeless people into the new headquarters. The marriage goes to Lisa, let's fully give over this building to the homeless now. And Lisa goes, we just need to get notarized. And the same text and accountant from earlier comes in and just notarizes it immediately. And Marge and Lisa high five. And our final gag of the episode is Marge and Homer. Ridiculous, but very fun, final little gag. She's hosing Homer down, and every time she gets close to his butt, he like either really likes it or doesn't like it. It just goes back and forth. Brilliant, probably heavily improvised vocal performance from Dan Castellaneta there. Just a very nice, fun little way to close out the episode, for sure. Yeah, alright, yeah. Final feelings, thoughts?
I think on our previous episode, I had a very similar
point. Yeah, 100%, me too.
Where
I
agree with the message of the episode, and they made really good points.
Uh-huh.
I just didn't find... I think the episode just left a lot to be desired. And it
Agreed.
Didn't quite flow like a good Simpsons episode would.
Yeah.
It wasn't that gag heavy, and the gags some kind of missed.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Again, I was just expecting a bit more, and I think they could have done more.
Uh-huh.
But some very interesting points were made.
Definitely.
Still some great moments.
Yeah,
but I think I would actually... I think this could be the weakest of the season. I'm going to give it a 6. A 6 still means it's good.
Yeah.
But it wasn't anything special or that amazing. It was just, you know, an episode.
Yeah,
really.
Perfectly passable episode. Yeah, yeah, like you said before, like, and again, it's a testament to how good the season has been, honestly, like, trying to look at it in a more positive light. Like, there really has been no start to backstage.
Nothing's been
no episode.
6. That's the lowest score I've given this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's been no, like, really, really bad episode. And for other seasons, this episode I probably would have been like in the middle, but because of how great the season has been for me too, I would probably say it's the biggest episode of the season so far. Anyway, I think it probably is my least favorite episode of the season. I gave it a 6.5.
Okay.
I said pretty similar to what you said, really. Yeah, we kind of linked up on our opinions in the last two episodes, actually.
Yeah,
I said it was a perfectly passable episode, but never goes anywhere like unexpected or out there. I said Marge and Lisa focus episodes can often fall to a risk of being dull, and this one nearly had a little more to offer. Like, it nearly did, it doesn't quite get there. I think of the family, they're probably my least favorite duo.
It's like they're a good duo, but it's like the episodes
they
that they're in
wrong. Yeah,
when it's about them two, tend to be a bit more boring than
I think the reason
you
now
always
that I'm
kind of
it,
like roll your eyes a bit and you're like, okay,
yeah,
let's see what happens.
I think a reason now that I'm only thinking about this now is, like, you have Homer and Bart, they're more wild card, so when you put them with Marge or Lisa, it's more of a challenge, whereas Marge and Lisa are both people who have pretty good morals.
Yeah.
So their conflicts are always going to be a lot smaller as a result. You know what I mean? Whereas you can put Homer against Lisa and it'll be like, Homer's trying to get $1 million just because he wants money and he's flawed. Whereas Lisa's like all about the environment, you know, whereas Marge and Lisa's morals are more kind of humane. So it's just, their conflicts can't be as interesting as a result. You know what I mean? But yeah, I think this episode, there's definitely some great Marge and Lisa episodes out, like some fantastic ones. This one wouldn't be one for me.
Mm-hmm.
Again, what I just mentioned there, it's a testament to what a great season this is, that this is the bottom of the barrel for me. There's nothing wrong with it, it's just not, it's definitely not Star of the Backstage or Meet His Murder. It's just forgettable, and it's not one I'd be looking to go back to anytime soon. Although I will say, to focus on like a positive point at the end, I thought the Burns speech at the end was an absolute highlight. Just fantastic. We haven't seen much of this season, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of him in the season 35 trailer. which I've set up before introducing the news for some reason. I think that's everything we have to say about the episode, right?
That's it.
Yeah. Absolutely passable. Nothing wrong with it. It's just, there's been so many standard episodes
you
this season.
You can probably write off this episode.
I know.
To be honest, of all the episodes in the season so far.
Yeah, it's weird. Why is it called that? Because now I think about it, it's not really... it's not...
Maybe they're like, oh, this isn't as good as...
Are they actually being very honest? Yeah, because does that have anything to do with charities?
I am thinking that.
Yeah. I guess like a tax write-off.
Oh, okay,
I suppose is what it's a pun on. But maybe they're also kind of saying, there's a lot of great episodes this season, you can skip this one. Maybe. If they intended on that, they're genie. I
imagine someone sitting there like, oh, okay, next one.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they're actually listening to... Although I like the idea of some... There must be at least one person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's funny to me. Right at this episode. All right, cheers. But yeah.
Or like, they're watching it on TV and they're like clicking the information button to the episode name and stuff. And they're like, oh, it says you can rock. Do you want to put on the chase instead? Yeah.
I love the idea of people taking it so literally.
No, it says it's a write-off, apparently. So.
Yeah. Put on the chase. A much more, like, throwaway show. No, like, character building or anything. But yeah, moving on to the news then.
D. Dylan Simpson News, Dylan Simpson's News. Dylan Simpson's News.
Yeah, literally, as I previously mentioned, this is the only news this week, that a Simpsons Season 35 trailer came out, which I'd highly recommend. It's on Fox's YouTube channel. Why are you so nervous? I know, scary. It just sounds like your heart's beating really fast. Yeah. It's a great trailer, and I highly recommend watching it. It's only a minute long. It's on Fox's YouTube channel. But I just... It's just like really quick little clips, but like definitely got me very excited for what's to come this season. And obviously it doesn't give anything away specifically, so I'm just like kind of trying to guess what happens from the clips that we saw. So we see a baby Bart at one point, so I'm guessing there's a flashback episode.
Apparently Bart dies.
Yeah, that's what I heard. We see there's a clip of Marge fighting Itchy and Scratchy, which I'm guessing is a Treehouse of Horror.
Yeah.
There's a clip that makes it look like they're going to be doing a Beatles Get Back parody. Which looks fun, but it looks like a really missed opportunity, I have to say. In that, it looks like a parody of Beatles Get Back, but it's just the actual Beatles. They should have done the B-Sharps.
Maybe they do, though, so that's not...
Maybe.
They have a joint show or something, I don't know.
I came up with this idea, and if it isn't what the episode is, it needs to be a thing. Wouldn't that be great? Because the Get Back is obviously just, like, footage of them rehearsing. And the B-Sharps is obviously a parody of the Beatles. A whole episode that's just footage of them rehearsing. I know. Yeah, Apu.
But imagine this is also the comeback episode to bring Apu back in.
I think that'd be a great way to
subtly... It's probably not going to happen.
But good idea.
Cool, yeah.
It'd be a great way to subtly bring him back.
Yeah.
I think it'd be a nice way to bring him back if it's just him as a character in an episode rather than it being like a big deal episode, you know?
True, yeah.
I think this would be a great way to bring him back. People have spoken, like lots of Indian American comedians and stuff like that, being like, I think Apu's a great character. If they want to bring him back, I'll voice him. Like, the complaint was never like the character in the show, it was just that a white person was voicing him.
Because the character in the show is.
He's one of the most intelligent people in.
But he's also ridiculous. Meant to be a stereotype. That's what makes
Which
it.
Which is
funny.
What the show does, yeah. It's not like he's the only stereotype.
Homer's a stereotype of a fat American dad, you know?
Yeah, Chief Wiggum's a stereotype of a bad police officer, bad principal, everything. That's the whole point of the characters in the show, yeah.
And that's why I don't particularly. I mean, we won't get into this too much.
Of course.
I don't particularly care. That it's voiced by a white person because it was a stereotype.
Yeah, of course.
So of course it doesn't really matter. Yeah, that's my two cents.
No, I agree with you, but they definitely got him with the times.
Yeah.
By not having Hank Azaria voice him anymore, but I don't think not having him voice him anymore and never seeing the character anymore was the right way to go. I think, as I said, a lot of the Indian American comedians have spoken about this. The right way to move forward would have been to still have the character, but just having him be voiced by an actual Indian person.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great way to bring him back. There's so many.
Even if it was an Indian American, because, you know, then they can do still a stereotypical accent.
Yeah, and that's obviously fine, totally.
And probably pretty well.
Oh, yeah, of course. I'd be really intrigued to see if they bring him back eventually. I know Matt Groening really wants to, but it seems like there's more hesitancy on like some of the other writers.
Yeah.
But what is it? Well, that would be a great way to bring it back, 100%. Like a B-Sharps episode, because it's one of his most classic episodes, too. But yeah, so there's stuff you see in the trailer. There's a Mr. Burns party. He's throwing a party for something, so that could be a cool episode. It looks like there's an episode that's going to recreate Cape Fear, the Sideshow Bob episode.
Wow.
Which I'm again is assuming is probably a Treehouse of Horror. And it did the same thing that they did in Simpsons, where it's like the older style animation, so looks really interesting. And the final little bit, it kept calling back to Mr. Burns, which I find very intriguing. And also there's one bit it looks like there's possibly going to be an Oppenheimer parody.
Already?
With like, I know, yeah. I don't know, this is what I'm getting from what I've seen in the clips. And it looks like Mr. Burns is going to be Robert J. Oppenheimer, which is...
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, pitch perfect casting, of course. That's such an obvious parody, but a great obvious parody. You know what I mean? So yeah, super exciting. Definitely check out that trailer for any Simpsons fans listening. I mean, if you're listening, I would hope you're a Simpsons fan. Definitely worth the watch. But yeah, jumping into Simpsons Classics.
Hell yeah. For the Computer War Menish.
Yeah, we had a proper classic episode in the last podcast. I think it's cool to do more of a nichier.
Yeah, it's a classic, but also it's, you know... a weirder one.
The Computer War Men Issue, season 12.
Yeah, what I love about this episode is it's like there's a lot of wacky Simpsons episodes, weird ones. Lego one, for example. That's just a weird episode.
Which one, sir?
The Lego one.
Oh, yeah, great.
Just because
yeah.
it's like, it's fucking Lego.
Very
like,
experimental
weird
and weird,
watch.
Yeah.
This is one that appears normal
yes.
from the outside, but progressively gets weirder.
Yeah.
And I love when The Simpsons do
that. Yeah, by the end, it's utter chaos.
So, is it a play on something else, like the title?
Yeah, well, on the computer wore men's shoes. I'm sure it is.
I feel like it's the name of a film or something.
The computer wore men's shoes. It sounds like it definitely is. I don't know what though. But I know the island thing is a parody of a show called The Island.
Yeah.
And I think the voice actor, that number six guy who tries to escape with Homer, he was the lead actor on that show. Yeah.
So Homer gets a computer because some guy, he wants to send an email because he goes into work and no one's at work.
Yeah, they're fumigating the power plant. That was a great little clip.
I love that Carl and Lenny are just like on their day off, just in a fucking open top car.
Yeah, in sunglasses. Chill. And Lenny's like, turn out the music. He goes like, yeah, anything can happen on our day off. Like, that's the crazy thing is turning up the music.
Well,
I love when they're fumigating the power plant as well. It's just Mr. Burns on his own. And the repellent gets into his face and he just faints immediately. It's a dumb clip.
That sounded weird.
That was my cheers. I can't replicate it now. It was my butt.
I love that Homer gets tricked into buying the most expensive computer.
Yeah. That scene is great too, yeah. When the guy's like, oh, that computer's 3 months old. You surely want the newest technology. Unless you're a loser. Are you, sir? No, of course not.
And I love that Homer has no like concept of how delicate a computer might be, and he just straps it to his car on a rope and he's just driving it home.
And he keeps throwing it away because he can't understand it.
There's like three different occasions where he just throws the computer away because he doesn't understand.
So
it.
Dumb, yeah, I love
and
it.
And his family force him to bring it back in. But Homer basically is designing a website, and it's not doing anything. But then people start telling him random bits of information that may or may not be true that usually end up being true.
Yeah.
That's going around Springfield, and he calls himself Mr. X.
Yes. And he finds out that, like, Mayor Quimby was using, like, people's taxes to make a secret pool in his office. Yeah. And just, yeah, loads of great little stuff like that. I mean, the best one, I keep talking about Mr. Burns. This is a Mr. Burns movie today, apparently.
Yeah.
The best Freddy episode, one of the funniest Freddy episode for me was that he was giving plutonium up to terrorists. Just the most evil thing he could possibly do. And it didn't even seem to be benefiting him. He was just doing it because it's evil.
Yeah, that's the thing. There was no, like, money discussed or anything. He was just like, here you go.
I agreed to give the plutonium to you, terrorists. And terrorists just go, oh, wow, you were a man worthy of Satan. It's like, oh, shucks, please.
So I feel like with Seth Classics, like, I don't want to just read you the whole plot because, well, one, you should watch it and you've probably seen it anyway.
Yeah.
Also, we've just talked about a whole plot of an episode, so it's probably more useful for me to just pick out the moments I enjoyed the most.
Yeah, yeah. We can cover the plot in bits and pieces.
We'll
just
go over it, but I mainly want to talk about my favourite parts of the episode.
Sure. And then one of my favourite bits before you do is when he's Krusty and Apu in the Quickie Mart together and Homer's like listening in. Because Krusty's complaining about the bagels and like Apu whispers in being like, the bagels are actually expired donuts. And Krusty's like, well, I also have a secret for you. I once killed a guy and buried him in the Springfield golf range. He's like, that's our little secret. And he's like, oh my god. And he just reports about the bagels. Krusty killing someone.
There's so many funny ones. I love that he gets, I love the idea of that fake Quickie Mart.
Oh, so great. That's when it gets weird,
yeah. And then he's on this whole, like, what I thought was a trip, but then ended up being this, like, secret island that they put people who know too much information on.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, you know, it's...
All these great little characters get introduced to, and it's like a very cliche, like, spy movie villain.
Yeah. And honestly, like, this episode, genuinely, is one of the most hilarious episodes I've ever seen.
It is.
It's so funny.
It is like chaotic, like absurd. The second half is like absurd, crazy humor, but like in a great way. I love the German spy who fills in for Homer.
Yeah.
He comes in like, "Mal, Johnny, I am back." Like, you're not Homer. It's like, let us go out for dinner. I'm going to take you out for dinner, then we will go home and have German sex. I'm like, I haven't gone out for dinner in a while. But Homer's like, did she have sex with this German guy?
True, actually. Yeah.
Oh, hilarious, though.
I genuinely think this is an underrated episode.
It is. It doesn't get the respect it deserves. Underrated. Yeah. It's definitely a really out there one.
After this rewatch, I was like, oh my god, this is incredible.
It really wasn't afraid to just go there. Yeah. I love the bit as well where he's like, he was going to escape with the number six guy who'd been making this wrap for ages, made out of like wood and toilet paper and stuff.
Oh, yeah. And Horace, like, I've been working 20 years on this.
Yeah, and Horace just runs, like, there's room for both of us. He just runs off with it. And that big, like, giant, like, bubbles are chasing after him. That's like, definitely the most absurd bit of the episode.
And he just grabs a fork, doesn't he?
Yeah, just pops it. And we see the villain is watching on CCTV and it's like, what made you think a bubble would be a good way to capture someone? Like, I don't know what I was thinking. I assume that's a reference to the show, but the dumb gag still works without knowing that show, you know? Yeah. I just want to see that show, actually. It sounds like a fun, weird show. Yeah, it's from the 60s. Definitely back in the 60s, where you were like, you know, these weirder sci-fi things. And conspiracy theories and stuff like that were like just coming into form. That
I do love sci-fi of that era. It's so interesting.
Something about it, because they were just kind of finding out what sci-fi was and really experimenting with it. I thought that'd be a really cool show to check out, definitely.
But honestly, love this episode.
Very fun.
So funny, so wacky. Homer's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a 9.5 for me.
Yeah.
I absolutely love it.
Yeah, we're really meeting up the last two podcasts. I would also say 9.5. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah, just a great Homer episode. Like, it starts off being like a classic Homer gag of like just him just, you know, getting really into something, but then like it takes an interesting turn that's different from any other episode, really.
Absolutely.
I love the bit as well when they're like giving an award. That's how they find out that he's Mr. X. They're like giving an award, like, well, we can't give the $5,000 to Mr. X because we don't know who he is, so we're going to give it to a foundation for sick children. No!
I think it's like to feed poor children.
To feed poor children, yeah. Like, no! He didn't care at first when it was like $5,000. He didn't say anything. To feed poor sick children. No! He goes in and grabs the money. Like, well, how do we know you're Mr. X?
And he puts the fucking question mark hat on.
I'm like, woo! And then Marge just come back to the house and Marge's like, oh, it's great we won all that money, but those poor children are like, oh, they were God now. Oh, that's sweet. Oh, wait. Such a great gag. Yeah, you can tell the writers really got to do what they want in this episode, too.
Completely, yeah.
Like you said, it starts off like a classic kind of Simpsons episode. It just takes such a crazy, weird turn. And, like, there really isn't an episode like this in the second half. Not, it's just so out there,
It's kind of that era of Simpsons where everything started getting a little bit wacky.
Yeah, because they were like, we've done so many like, great episodes, grounded episodes, don't get me wrong. But they got to a point where they're like, okay, well, we can't keep doing this. Let's start doing something really out there. This was a great example. I love that it doesn't even end with a happy ending.
I know.
Like, they're, like, stuck on the island together, and that final image of, like, the koala with the sunglasses. Oh, just so great and weird. Yeah, wonderful episode. But, yeah, let's continue on with who wrote this episode. So, yeah, as I always introduce this segment, this is a segment where I honor the writer of the episode, just for the writer's try, which is still ongoing, just to give the writers the credit they deserve. This episode is written by J. Stewart Burns. Joined the show later, so just a pure coincidence that his surname is Burns. Mr. Burns is becoming like a theme of this episode. But honestly, I think one of the best current writers working on the show, which I will be honest, is why I was even more disappointed by this episode, because pretty much every episode he's done up until this one is like pretty fantastic. But credit where credit is due to him, he is like usually does amazing episodes. He's a writer on both The Simpsons and Futurama. He's clearly a very smart man. He has a master's in mathematics.
Wow.
Yeah. His first writing credit was on Beavis and Butthead. So just huge history here. Very fascinating. And shows how obviously techie he is and how smart he is. He's the original developer and still facilitates The Simpsons Tapped Out. Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised that's probably his biggest moneymaker. If he's a big developer on it, obviously. He has a big residuals on it. But yeah, fair play to him. He's won 4 Emmys, 3 for The Simpsons and 1 for Futurama. And he wrote the Futurama episode, which is like many people's favorite, Roswell That Ends Well, where they go back in time to like 1950s Roswell, and like it addresses all those theories about Area 51 in the 50s. Great, great episode. I don't know if it's my favorite, but like I wouldn't judge anybody who thinks it's the best Futurama episode. So my top 3 favorite episodes that he's written of The Simpsons, and again, all of these are 9.5s for me at least, if not 10s. 3, Moe Baby Blues, and this one I know you love, the one that has that relationship between Moe and Maggie that just develops so brilliantly. which is in season 14. Number two, Holidays of Future Past, one I mentioned many, many times, the one set in the future at Christmas time, and it was written at one point to potentially be the show's last episode, and I think it could have been. That's just how good it is. Fantastic episode, season 23. And number one, easily in my top 20 favorite episodes ever, Eternal Moonshine of Simpson Mine, which is the one, I'm not sure about if you've seen it, we talked about it before, the one where he takes that forget-me shot and he wakes up and the family are all gone and he doesn't know where they are. Homer, obviously. Yeah. So he has to like try find where the family are and like build back his memory. And obviously it's a little bit of a parody of Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah.
Just wonderful written episode. One of my favorite like emotional journeys for Homer. Just brilliant episode. Just a real testament of like what an incredible writer J. Stewart Burns is. He's these three great episodes that like build these characters in a really interesting way so well. Like Mo and that one I just mentioned, all the family, Holidays of Future Past, and then Turtle Moonshine, Homer, so brilliantly, yeah. Great, great writer. Yeah, moving on to recommendation of the week.
Questions this week?
Oh, sorry, yeah, I'm getting the order all wrong. Will we mix it up? Yeah, since I just said, let's do the recommendations, yeah.
It might be funny to end on a question.
Yeah, yeah, let's give it a go. Rock, paper, scissors. Oh, back to normal. I'm opening up the recommendation again. My recommendation will be kind of a weird one because I don't know how you'll be able to see this. Like, you will be able to see it eventually, but how? It's up to you. Basically, I saw my favorite comedian, and I'll show Sebastian the cup again. I bought it because I had to remember it's the experience because cool it was so wonderful. Yeah. My favorite comedian, Mike Birbiglia.
It looks like you're not going to use the cup. You're just going to keep it as a...
I'm thinking. I'm kind of indecisive, yeah. Because it'll wear out if I start using it. I'm thinking, let's keep it as a prop. Or I'm in two minds, but yes, you're correct that I haven't used it yet. Yeah, I saw my favorite comedian, Mike Birbiglia, who's currently doing a show at the Wyndham's Theatre in London called The Old Man in the Pool. Incredible show. I know he's still doing it in America for a bit too, so I'm sure some Americans can check him out and see the show if you haven't already. If not, I'm sure it's going to be on Netflix eventually because all his other specials are also, and it's just a wonderful show. Mike Birbiglia has this incredible way of mixing drama with comedy, and it's so cool to see that being done in stand-up, just because stand-up is usually seen as something that has to be joke.
Yeah.
I think he does an amazing way of telling more emotional stories while still being absolutely hilarious. And it was just such a touching show. It made me laugh so much. But all of the shows have different themes to them. The theme of this one was death. And it really does just touch on like our own fear of our own mortality so beautifully. And just a wonderful message. Just like, you know, we're only on this earth for such a short time. Just make sure to enjoy it while you can. And it really just hit that message so beautifully for me. And while still being absolutely hilarious. And I've spoken before about how much I love dramedies. How a show can make you laugh, or a movie, or a sound special, or whatever, can make you laugh and make you cry at the same time. I love that mix. It's like you're experiencing all some of the most visceral human emotions at once. And I think this show just encapsulates on that brilliantly. So yeah, I couldn't recommend it enough. The Old Man in the Pool.
Nice.
However you can end up seeing it, just check it out. It's great.
Yeah, it was beautifully said.
Thank you. Yeah, the show just touched me so much. Yeah, I had to.
Who touched you?
Had to get in there.
Who touched you?
Michael Biglia.
No.
But it was consensual, don't worry.
So my recommendation of the week.
Yes.
Do you ever read a book and...
No. I'm illiterate.
Do you ever read a book and like it sort of just went over your head? And then you return to it another time and you're like, oh, this is really good.
Absolutely, yeah. Movies as well.
Yeah.
A few things.
I mean, rest in peace, a legendary hip hop producer called J Dilla. There's a book, it's sort of like a biography about him.
Right.
Called Dilla Time. And it's written...
Diller Time.
Dilla Time, yeah. And it's written by, I can't remember the guy's name, but he's like a professor for like music and technology at a very established college in the US.
Yeah.
But he wrote a biography about J Dilla.
Yeah.
Because he passed away, it was about definitely maybe just under 20 years now.
Oh, wow, okay, well, a while ago.
He died quite young. But,
yeah.
How
old, roughly?
I think he was just approaching 30.
Shit, right, very young.
But amazing producer, I know that you'll know Questlove.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah,
Questlove cites him as one of his biggest inspirations.
Oh.
Questlove is a drummer that was inspired by someone that made drums on a machine.
Oh, which is fascinating.
Very fascinating.
Yeah. And one of the best drummers in the world.
Yeah.
Amazing, yeah.
But Jay Dilla completely changed the game of drum patterns and rhythm and in hip-hop music. And he goes under people's radars. I think he produced a lot more songs than people think.
Yeah.
I won't bang on too much about him, but if you want to find out more about how music and especially hip-hop was made in the late 90s, early 2000s, check this book out. It's also nice. He lived a very interesting life.
It's an autobiography, right? He wrote it.
This guy wrote it about...
Oh, sorry, the professor guy wrote about him. Yeah, sorry.
And, I mean, the most interesting thing about Jay Dilla is probably the fact that the last album he made, he made whilst he was dying on a hospital bed.
Wow.
And he got people to bring in records for him. Sometimes he was so weak that he had to get people to like actually press the machine for
him. God, that's really inspiring though. It's like a creator till the end.
Yeah, he was obsessive, and it was the only thing he was doing, and he was a very quiet guy. He just let the music do the talking.
God.
And he earned people's respect that way.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Oh, I love that, yeah.
And genuinely, when you listen to the beats and stuff he made, he's just an absolute master. He'll make a song out of a song. It's like, sometimes you might hear a track, and it's like sample song, and you're like, yeah, that sounds cool. He has this ability to make a whole new track from a track. It's crazy.
Wonderful. I love that.
Yeah.
I love hearing stories about like creators being creators until the very end, even if sometimes it ends up killing them. I've been watching Roger Ebert's documentary Life Itself, you know, the film critic, probably one of the biggest film critics in the world. And it follows him, like, you know, towards the end of his life, where he was totally weird, wheelchair bound. He was on one of those systems like that Stephen Hawking had, where you have to communicate through a computer. And he was I can't remember what he got, but like he wasn't able to move or anything, so he was literally getting his wife, he would still watch movies and was still clearly taking them in very intellectually, because he was getting his wife like type up the reviews for him as he repeated it over the computer. Yeah, so like his last couple of reviews were just made through that system. It's just like he was as sick as could possibly be, was going to die, and he was still trying to get work out there,
you
know? Yeah,
because that's the meaning of his life.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
That's what his life is.
He loved movies, loved watching movies and expressing his feeling towards them. You know, such a beautiful thing. Yeah, cool. My final recommendation is, I mean, I would imagine anyone who listens to this podcast has seen it, but just in case you haven't, or if you're thinking, I've seen it already, I don't need to rewatch it, rewatch this movie forever, in my opinion. South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. It's just one of my favorite films ever. Yeah.
And he called me out the other day because I, for some reason, had ranked it really low on Letterboxd, even though I don't think that at all.
Every now and again, I'll like just randomly look at a movie on Letterboxd and I'll see Sebastian has given it like a questionable rating. I'm like, explain yourself.
I think it's just because I think I've just gone on massive sprees.
Yeah.
Like, have I seen this film? Yeah, okay, well, I'm rating it.
Sure.
But I don't know why I gave
2.5 stars, mentally.
Yeah, no, it's a 4 for me.
It's a 5-star movie for me. It just makes me happy. And a movie that brings that kind of joy.
Of course, yeah.
What any sort of, like, critiques you could give it, like, oh, the story isn't quite there. It doesn't matter. It's just a film that brings me happiness. And, I mean, if anyone has the fortune of experiencing this, I'd recommend it too. It's just, I got to see it. It was showing in a couple of cinemas recently. I got to see it in a screen filled with like clearly like-minded people who love the show also, and there is hesitancy at the beginning of like people are kind of like quietly singing, but by the second song everyone was singing along to every song.
Nice.
It was just such a wonderful fun experience. Just
nice.
So great, just such a fun stupid comedy in the best way, and just well-written songs. Trey Parker, Matt Stone, just I love them so much. And just that movie is just an encapsulation of how brilliant they are as writers and creators, just getting to always do exactly what they want to do and getting away with it.
Yeah.
Just fantastic, yeah. Cool. Any other recommendation from you?
No, that was
it? Sweet. Yeah. Alright, let's jump on to the questions then.
Are they all serious?
So once again, one is kind of silly, and one is kind of Simpsons related, but not really.
We'll leave the silly one till the end then.
Okay, cool. So number one comes from Bart Art, a great Instagram page who's asked us questions before.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I said, not quite. Like, he asked this question because of the show, but it's not really about the show. He just goes, what other shows deserve the movie treatment? Interesting question.
Yeah.
I'm
trying to think of shows that don't have
I know at one point, yeah, I know at one point it got cancelled for some reason. The American Dad guys were going to make a movie where the family go to Roger's home planet, and I think that would have been great.
That'd be sick.
There's, they haven't said why it got cancelled, but I think American Dad in general, just those characters and the concept of American Dad would be great for a movie. But I think that plot in particular would be a great, a bit great reason to make it a movie, because Seth MacFarlane always says he wouldn't want to make a movie of his shows unless he came up with a story that couldn't be an episode, you know, and that's a great example of one. A family movie as well.
I'll go for something current. I reckon The Bear would be a really good movie.
I could see that, it could be a great finale.
Maybe they could touch on like a prequel to The Bear.
Have like John Bernthal be in there. You haven't seen season 2 yet, have you?
No.
I mean, that's another recommendation for sure. Season 2 of The Bear is
fantastic.
Oh, I did already. Yeah. I'm getting mixed up now of what I reckon and what I haven't.
But yeah, I reckon The Bear, if we're keeping it current, I reckon, because it's still running a show.
Yeah.
I reckon a movie, like prequel movie of that would be really good.
That'd be awesome. And the show has done like an incredible job of, like, there could be a 20-minute episode that's great, and there could be an hour-long episode that's also great. They seem to be able to jump into different, like, you know, variations of content very well. So I can see it very seamlessly turning it something to a movie, definitely. I know that there's been talks of there being a Community movie for a while. I would love to see a Community movie. Just bring that whole team back. It'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
That'd be the biggest ones for me. A Family Guy movie also. I mean, Seth MacFarlane's been teasing that for ages. Yeah. That would be a great one. He said that if he ever did a movie, he'd like it to be, like, Stewie making a device that takes the whole family into the real world. I think that'd be a great reason. That's a great excuse to have there be a movie, because there's such broad, crazy episodes of Family Guy, but they've never gone there, so that's a good, that'd be a great reason to have it be a movie, you know? Yeah, I'd love to see that. And yeah,
cool.
I think that's a good answer to that question. Yeah, let's answer the final dumb question. Is actually a question you'd be able to answer. I think I'll give you the reins here.
Okay.
My buddy Owen Curry from County Kerry, where I'm from. He said, why did Chelsea finish fifth in 17-18 under Conte after winning the league in 16-17?
It's like he knows I'm a Chelsea fan, maybe.
I would doubt he's listening to this, but maybe. I feel like he's just teasing me because he knows I hate sports.
Oh, okay.
But maybe he has happened. But either way, if he was just being silly, he didn't realise we actually have a genuine Chelsea fan.
I think that it's because it ended on such a high. And I think the football became predictable and teams kind of now knew the way we won the league that season, how to play around it.
Yeah.
And I think Conte is such a one-season manager. Like, I don't think
he's a manager. I didn't know what Conte was.
I think he's not a long-term project manager. I think he's someone you bring in for a season that does wonders.
Interesting.
That's my theory.
He's Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
That's right. I make sense of it in any way that I can. That's a really good answer.
Yeah, that's the one.
I didn't really know what he was talking about, but that sounds right. Yeah, I had a feeling you'd enjoy answering that question. You know your stuff. There you go. Obviously, he didn't. He was cross about this. He seemed to understand it. Yeah. All right. I guess that's everything. Guys,
sayonara.
You know what I say. Thank you as always for listening. And I think we need to have a meeting soon where we meet up and you impregnate me and I have your children. Our
Let's
little
do a fan meetup.
Dylan and Sebastian have a Simpsons podcast babies.
Oh my god.
You know? We'll name them after our favorite episodes from the show. Like, oh, this is little Homer goes to college. Alright.
Alright.
We'll leave it on that note. Thank you guys for listening and see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.